Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
And The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. Of course, you know the thing we have about the show here as well. We stream live online at theadvertisingshow.com. It's also a great place that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week and send us your questions, threats, comments, and things like that. Our special guest today, Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. Even the cover of the book looks cool, kind of cutting edge.
It really does, and I think they're also planning on a flavor of ice cream at 33, at the 33.
Buzz Monkey?
Baskin Robbins. Yeah, it's going to replace Chunky Monkey.
Chunky Monkey.
No, that's another brand.
That's Chubby Hubby.
Yeah. That anyway, it's a great book, and I look forward to visiting with Sam. And I got to tell you, for those that aren't familiar with Buzz Monkey, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be, but if you're not, it's a first novel for Sam Hill. Sam Hill's a very well-known business writer and consultant, and has an illustrious background in consulting, as well as worked at one time for Darcy. And, of course, it wasn't working, meaning an AE or a creative guy.
He wasn't doing that, was he?
Yeah. No. You ready for this title? Vice Chairman and Chief Strategic Officer.
Oh.
We're going to find out what the hell that means.
He has two bars on his shoulders or something like that.
Well, people do a lot of saluting, and they do the one-finger saluting.
The one-finger saluting. And he salutes right back,
yeah,
maybe.
Right.
Well, let's see. You remember Ralph Nader? Of course you
sure
do. Who can forget Ralph Nader?
Wonderful teeth.
Wonderful teeth. I remember the hair. He looked like...
I got to tell you, he's a poster child for the Bright Smile company.
Ralph is back. Ralph never went away. By the way, I saw one of the cars that he condemned, the Corvair. I think it was a 67 Corvair or 66 Corvair.
Remember
at a classic car show. That's the only place you see him. A lot.
Yeah, worth a lot. Thanks
cool
Ralph.
But
yeah.
Ralph's back. He's the Ralph Nader back group that was first to file the complaint that triggered the FTC action against deceptive internet search engine advertising is now taking aim at the practice of product placement on television.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, can you believe that? Commercial Alert, a Portland, Oregon-based nonprofit consumer watchdog group, filed a similar complaint with the FTC and the Federal Communications Commission, charging that the television networks were deceiving the public by failing to disclose product placements. This is nothing new, folks. This has been going on for years and years.
That's exactly
and years
right.
And years. Come on now.
Yeah.
Ralph, time to retire. You know?
What do they think?
Learn golf.
You're going to go out and be urged to buy something and you don't know why?
Yeah, right.
I mean, what is this about?
Yeah, that's about as stupid as the lawsuits for the kids getting fat at McDonald's.
Well, let's put it this way. When was the last time Ralph got any pub? So maybe that's why he's doing this.
Well, could be.
Yeah.
Could be. I was surprised to see that he's still around, actually.
Great new feature today.
Yes, it is.
The Mary Lou.
Quinlan.
Go ahead. You handle it, Ray.
Yeah, it's a brand new feature. Mary Lou Quinlan. What's the
What name? Women Want.
What Women Want is the
Which
name
I've
of the
been
book.
Trying to figure that out for life.
Good luck, pal.
Yeah. It's a great feature, though.
It's a feature, and if you have a problem figuring it out, too, we'd invite you to listen right about now.
Everybody talks at once.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
Want to know what makes women crazy? Three words: automated phone systems. You know, those customer service lines where you press one for this, two for that, M for murder. As a marketer, you may think of those systems as a money saver for your business. But women tell me there's nothing more frustrating than being stranded in a phone maze. They call it road rage. As soon as they hear the recorded greeting, they start banging the zero, star, pound, anything to get a live person to answer. Now, in response, some companies have invented their own humanoid, a Miss Cyber Congeniality, who talks to you like you've lost your mind. Hello, what would we like to do today? Did you ever find yourself screaming into your phone trying to out the human you just know is hiding inside? Okay, if you're a guy, you might be saying, I hate those phone systems too. But women experience it more often. They're the ones who make the reservations, call the catalog companies, and check on the insurance payments. Today's female consumers are in a stressed-out hurry. They want answers, and they want them now. What can you do about it? If you care about how women feel about your brand, tell her up front what key to press for a person. Get your service reps to pick up quickly when it rings. Teach your people to solve problems rather than pass the buck, especially if they're passing it to a robot. What do women want? A human voice saying, "May I help you?" would be a nice start.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
That's some great advice from Mary Lou Quinlan, a brand new feature here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth. Coming up, Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey.
She just reminded me I need to check with my wife on some travel arrangements.
Is that what you got out of that?
Well, no. She did make a good point.
And she makes a very good point.
Yeah, and if you are a business person and you have one of those type of phone systems, you know, get rid of it for both men and women because bugs the hell out of me, too, huh, Ray?
Oh, absolutely. The worst thing they did was get rid of a receptionist, right. Probably one of the most pivotal, most important people in your entire company.
Plus, who are we talking to now when we're in the lobby? Nobody's there anymore.
No, there's not. An empty desk, right?
Hey, you know, the World Series will be televised in Russia for the first time this year, so keep your Moscow plans in place.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know this. I certainly didn't until I read this on broadcastingandcable.com.
The nice borscht dipped.
Well, yeah. I'm going to get to that because you just took my line. The game next month will be televised by Sport, an over-the-air network that began broadcasting in June, just this past June. Steve Fedostov, Russia's minister of sport, and who's going to call me on mispronouncing that, right, met recently with baseball officials who said that they helped develop the sport in Russia by assisting the youth in coaching development. A Russian youth team recently, Ray, played an exhibition game in New York against a team from the Harlem RBI program.
Yeah.
So can you hear, you know, like George Lois there? Hey, Ruski, I got your Bosch. I got it right here. You know, anyway, it's New York is a great place, I guess, to introduce baseball to Russians. There's a lot of Russian community there.
Sure.
in New York.
Sure.
So if you are planning your trip to Moscow, Leningrad, or any area over there, who knows, Chechnya? Did I say that right?
Chechnya.
Yeah, then keep your plans in place because you will not miss one strike or one ball or one home run.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
First Lady was there this past week.
I saw that.
In France as well.
I got to tell you,
I'd be afraid to go to France if I was the First Lady.
George has a great person in her as far as an ambassador for, and we all Americans should be proud of the job
sure.
that she does. She does a great job of representing the women of America.
And so will, what's his name, Schwarzenegger do a good job representing his state. I have a prediction the man's going to get elected.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
You may be right.
It's going to happen.
By the way, did you Letterman has been having fun with our president, and he does little spoofs on the joke that was...
The joke that wasn't a joke? Yeah,
yeah,
right.
It's funny stuff.
Yeah, even though it wasn't a joke, right?
Right.
Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey on the Way with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and The Advertising Show up next. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
What do you mean you can't return the car, sir? Was it stolen?
No, sir.
You had an accident, right?
Well, I kind of. No, I did it on purpose.
What did you do, sir?
Well, you remember when I came in to rent the car and
yeah.
I insisted? I made a fuss about it being a Camaro.
Yes, I remember.
Remember, it had to be a Camaro because I really wanted to impress a very special lady. We're going to drive through the Redwoods. Well, she was impressed.
Right, okay.
I picked her up, and the first thing she said was, "Wow, now that's a Chevy." So I said, "Camaro." And she said, "Yeah." And, you know, the more we drove, the more impressed she got. She
yeah.
couldn't stop talking about the Camaro.
Yeah, okay.
She was really impressed by the car and me. And she was talking about me and the car, me, the car. So I gave it to her.
What would you give her?
I gave her your Camaro.
what do you intend to do about that?
Well, I did have unlimited mileage, didn't I?
That's a Chevy.
And that's a classic spot. What a great spot.
Chuck Bloor.
Yeah. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest today is Sam Hill. Sam is, we're going to talk about Buzz Monkey today, but there are other books. Radical Marketing, his first book, co-authored with Glenn Rifkin, and published this year, now in its sixth printing, has been translated into seven languages. Fortune named it one of the best books of 99, Sales and Marketing Management, made Radical Marketing an editor's pick. His second book, The Infinite Asset, named one of the best business books of the last two decades by CNNFN. 60 Trends in 60 Minutes, and we're talking about Buzz Monkey today. I'd like to welcome Sam Hill to the Advertising Show. Sam, thanks for joining us from Chicago today.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Wonderful.
Doing great. How's everything in Chicago, Sam?
Well, it's starting to get cold. It's been getting colder all week, and now we're going to have a nice chilly weekend here.
Well, you know, you have the opposite weather we do. We have the beginning of summer and the end of summer, and then it starts all over again. You have the beginning of winter and the end of winter, and then you throw some heat in there for summer, I suppose.
A few days of heat, yeah. Right, exactly.
Hey, Sam, Ray did a great job of, I think, giving our audience a sense of your background, and the obvious question that comes to mind is why does a nonfiction business writer decide to write a novel?
Well, I think there's my flip answer.
Well, let's have both of them.
My flip answer is, having spent all that time honing my typing skills, writing nonfiction books, that I decided just to keep going and keep writing something else to keep my typing skills informed. The real thing is I've always wanted to play around with fiction, and I've just never quite had enough courage to do it. And then when I wrote the nonfiction books and people said nice things about them, I sort of worked up enough courage to try a fiction book.
Hmm. So what did you learn from your business writing, from a nonfiction business writer perspective, that you were able to translate into writing novels?
Well, the biggest thing, when you write a book, and I think everyone who tackles a book figures this out, books are huge. It takes you roughly 1,000 hours to write a book. If you work 4 hours a day, you're going to be working all day on a book, all year on a book. So what you find out is you kind of get your head around that pacing, and you get your head around the fact that things are going to happen very slowly, and it lets you work your way through it. I think the biggest problem that I would have had if I hadn't done the nonfiction is I think I just would have gotten too deflated trying to get my way through it, because you write, you do your word count, you've got 300 words, and you've got 80,000 to go.
Hmm.
And that's a very tough thing in your first book.
So you're saying, just for clarification, whether it's nonfiction or a novel, it's still more of a marathon than a sprint, huh?
It's very, very much a marathon. And there's a point where you get halfway through it, where you start reading what you've written, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, and you're convinced that it seriously sucks. And you're halfway through. You're too far to quit, and there's a long way left to go.
Hmm.
And when you've done a couple of books, you get used to that feeling and you recognize it. But the first time you do it, it's pretty unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about the why do suits, and of course I think everybody knows what I mean by that, but why do suits write better books than creatives as it relates to, like, the agency world?
Because we're the ones who are trapped. The creatives get to show off their creativity. I mean, if you think about an ad agency, everybody I've ever met in an agency was creative, because creative people are drawn to the business. But the problem is, the creatives get to wear cool black turtlenecks and black blue jeans and pointy black boots with silver tips, and they get to goad the client and show them creative stuff. The rest of us are trapped in white shirts, red ties, blue suits, and everybody tells us how boring we are. So we have to go home and write novels at night. It's the only outlet we've got.
You ever try basketball? Something like that, possibly.
Well, except for the fact I'm short and slow, basketball is a great solution.
Okay, all right.
You know, I had a pleasure reading your book, Sam, and I got to tell you, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit. You are our first novelist that we've ever interviewed, so, you know, you're going to have to bear with us here. We know we're not supposed to give away the ending, so we won't do that. And plus the fact that we're sensitive to who our audience is, which are mostly business people, advertising, marketing, PR, media people, et cetera. I think a lot of our audience would be interested in, you know, how you go about actually writing a book. How do you decide on a particular topic? And whether you want to talk about your business book background or your current novel that's out, how do you arrive at a subject and decide to pursue that?
Well, for me, both of them start the same. For me, I get up in the morning, I go in the bathroom, and I look down on the table, and there's a scrawl note on a piece of paper. I keep a pad of paper in our bathroom. And what that means is I've gotten up in the middle of the night, I've had an idea, and I've gone in there and I've written it down. And if I can read it, then those ideas usually turn into something.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 30 folders in the back of my office with little pieces of ideas in them. And some have turned into books and some haven't. But it always starts with an idea. In the case of fiction, it's an idea for a character or an idea for a situation. In the case of nonfiction, it's usually an idea to solve a client problem.
Mm-hmm.
Some client's been telling you that they can't measure their advertising, and you get an idea for how you might be able to do that, and you jot it down. And when I show people that, a lot of times they're a little bit surprised because I think they expect books to start in a more grandiose way. But at least for me, they always start with four words scrawled on a little piece of paper. And you just keep the best ones and you throw the other ones away.
You could say that for many things. Great companies started that way.
Mm-hmm.
An invention started that way.
Right.
On a small piece of paper.
Right.
Sure.
I think Compaq Computers, based here in our home market of Houston, started on a napkin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The legend has that Compaq is that the first one was drawn on the back of a napkin.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you were describing that, and you said you get up in the morning and you go to the bathroom and you were describing all that, at that point, Ray and I thought we were capable of writing a novel or something.
Because you go to the bathroom every morning?
Well, yeah.
You write stuff down?
No, just because we get up in the morning.
We're just like Sam, aren't we?
We thought we paralleled you until you got into
Sam,
having to look for something written on paper and that made sense, and then you began to develop an idea.
Right.
Up until that point, the get up in the morning and go to the bathroom, we were just right on point with you.
Exactly, exactly.
So we thought maybe there was some creative talent involved in that.
Well, once you get the nonfiction idea, and once you start working on business problems, the process is a little bit different after the idea stage, but they all start out pretty much the same.
And you do, I guess, Sam, have to understand upon writing a business book that you do have a premise or some kind of concept that you're about to convey to your reader, I suppose, huh?
You do. You start out, you ask yourself a couple of questions. You ask yourself, what's the big idea? You ask yourself, who cares? You ask yourself if anything's new. And what I usually do is I usually go spend 3 or 4 days in the library just reading stacks of stuff to see if I've invented something that somebody else invented 30 years ago.
Let's take a break here, Sam, on the Advertising Show. Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey, our special guest today with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We've got to take a break as well for The Wacky World of Marketing. That's coming up next with our executive producer, Bruce Abbott. We've also got Andy Borowitz a little bit later on this hour. And what is it, goodvertising or badvertising?
It's going to be good next
hour.
All
right. Yep. The news is good.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can stick around for at least about 40 minutes or so, we'll have lots of great stuff here with Sam Hill, of course, as well, from Chicago on The Advertising Show.
And now it's time for The Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update puts a funny spin on a serious subject. A 40-foot-long replica of the human colon is winding its way throughout the country to educate people on the dangers of colon cancer. The colossal colon is designed for children and adults to crawl through and allow visitors to see different stages of the disease from polyps to full-blown cancer. So all laughing aside, organizers hope that the exhibit will get people thinking about a part of the body that is usually never discussed. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads for Ford.
Standing on the corner, watching all the Fords go by. Standing on the corner, giving all the Fords the eye.
It's the Advertising Show and a classic spot for Fords. We're talking about cars before. We're talking about the famous Corvair. That's a great spot, though. We've got Sam Hill, our special guest today, as author of Buzz Monkey. And, Sam, it's great to be talking to you today from Chicago. Thanks for being on the Advertising Show.
Great fun.
Hey, Sam. Ray, last segment, in the open of the last segment, read your bio and mentioned that one of your books, actually your first book, Radical Marketing. I think much of our audience would be familiar with that book, co-authored with Glenn Rifkin. It was published, what year was that published, Sam?
98.
And it has been translated into seven languages and is in its sixth printing. Do you know those seven languages?
I don't know all of them. I've got about half of them. I've got the Portuguese one, I've got the Spanish one, and I've got the Polish one. And I also have one that is either Korean or Japanese. It came in the mail with no note, so I don't know. But it's also supposed to be in French. It's supposed to be in Thai. And it's supposed to be in Chinese.
Hmm. That's interesting. I guess Taiwan would be a much marketing activity over
sure.
there.
Sure. In China, chapter one would be chapter 12, right? Is that right?
No, they read it from the back forwards. That's right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you get it in Arabic, we start at the bottom of the page and read up, I suppose, huh? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Well, I actually did a speech once in Bogota, Colombia, and it turned out the person doing the simultaneous translation was actually the person who had translated my book from English into Spanish. Apparently, Colombian Spanish is almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So around the world, a lot of Spanish people, Spanish publishers, use Colombians to do their translation.
Hmm. Castilian Spanish? Or
apparently, it's a very pure Spanish.
Yeah.
So anyway, the end of the story is I would say one short sentence in this speech, and then the translation would go on for like 5 minutes.
Right.
And you knew that. Since she had translated the book, she was just adding what she thought was important to the content.
Right. They call your book over there in the Hispanic areas, countries, the War and Peace of Marketing, I think.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
It is a coffee table book.
Yes, it is. It comes with pictures. Sam, now that you've written a novel, will you ever write another nonfiction business book?
I would if I had another idea.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote my three nonfiction books because I had ideas. I had ideas about how people were doing marketing, and I had ideas about brand portfolio management, and I had some ideas about trends. I haven't had another good nonfiction idea. If I came across one, I might try it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, fiction, for me, fiction's a lot more fun.
Well, I want to talk about character development because you do a great job of that. But before we do it, I want to talk a little bit more about your business books. One final question about that, and then we'll jump into your novel, 60 Trends in 60 Minutes. We had you on our show, gosh, a year or so ago when we were just a local show.
Right.
Well, let's not use the word just. Let's just say a local show.
Yeah.
And we talked about 60 Trends in 60 Minutes, and I'll ask you a question that I asked you a year or so ago. Again, which is, of your 60 trends in 60 minutes, how many have become more than just a trend, and how many do you wish you would not have included in that original 60?
Well, they're about, I actually, being a minor league anal compulsive, I actually keep files on these trends going forward. And there's 30-some odd of them where there are now articles that have appeared in major magazines about the trends I identified. For example, I had one on bionicism, and 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal did a huge section on the new bionic boomer. So it was the same trend. So about half of them have really become pretty popular, pretty well known, and about half of them are still out there a bit. Are there any that I wouldn't have included? Absolutely not. You know, I sort of believe that that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I'm in print, so unless I'm misproved, I'm never going to renege on any of them.
Well, and plus, how clever would it be, 59 trends in 59 minutes? I mean,
trends that are true and one that I made
up. Yeah, exactly.
Don't forget, we are a very compelling time.
We are time impoverished, Brad. Okay?
That's true. Exactly. Today's consumer, and we all are time impoverished, so you do need to have 60 minutes. I tried to read that book in 60 minutes, Sam, and I got to tell you, it was a challenge.
Yeah, if you were an Evelyn Woods student, you'd have a heck of a time with it.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, when you write a book like that, it's extremely nice when the trends start coming true. Because writing a trends book is sort of scary. You know, you're opening yourself up to people opening the book 5 years from now and laughing at you.
Well, and you mentioned earlier, it takes roughly a year to write a book. My goodness, talk about anxiety. You're writing quickly saying, damn it, I need to hurry up with this because a trend's going to, you know, I guess you might want to have 70 trends so that when the 10 that you're writing on are no longer trending or and become reality, you can back off those 10 and still have 60.
We actually started out with 139.
Did you? Now, there's a ring to a book, 139 trends in 139 minutes.
It sounds like how they lower prices at Walmart, Sam, basically. You know, it's knocked down again. Right. Hey, Sam Hill, our special guest. Sam recognized as one of the leading edge thinkers on the topics of growth, marketing, and branding. And we've got him on the show today. We'll be back with more on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe are taking your questions at theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
You love Double Mint Gum. Double good, Double Mint Gum. Double fresh flavor, double smooth too. Double Mint, double delightful to chew.
The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, and our special guest today is Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey, Double Mint Gum, a classic spot. The Double Mint Twins, they are now the Double Mint, geriatric twins.
That was before the Coors Light Twins.
Or the, no, not the, do you mean the Bud Light Twins?
No, the Coors Light, I think.
Was it? Okay.
Well, I could be wrong. We don't drink light beer, so we wouldn't know.
No, why bother?
All right.
Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. Sam, thanks for being on The Advertising Show.
Terrific.
Hey, Sam, let's jump into your book. We've teased this enough. I'm curious. Several years ago, I had the pleasure of taking a comedy writing course, and the teacher, of all people, was Danny Simon, which was Neil Simon's brother. And apparently, I didn't know this, of course, but Danny, along with Neil and many others, were writers for the Dick Van Dyke Show, as well as Show of Shows by Sid Caesar and other classics from the 50s and 60s. And I remember in that class, among other things, Danny Simon explaining about how comedy writers, when they develop skits or characters, that in many cases they don't really know where the character is going in a particular scene. They let the character kind of dictate where they would go by understanding who the character is, etc. Did you find that to be the way you wrote the novel Buzz Monkey? Did you have an ending to your book before you wrote it? Did you find it taking different twists and turns that you had not planned on?
Well, I absolutely did not have an ending, and that's exactly the way I did it. And the way I describe it to people is when you're writing a book, it's a little bit like you're reading a book. You don't quite know what happens next. You've got your guesses, but until you actually sit down and write it, you don't quite know. And you have it roughly structured out. You know that the first third of a book is setting up the problem. You know that the middle third of the book is the character working his way through it. You know the last third of the book, you know you have to end up with some sort of ending. You can't just get to 80,000 words because it's in your contract and just stop typing. So you have an idea of a rough flow. But as far as who lives, who dies, You know, Elmore Leonard is famous for saying that one of his books was almost ruined because his hero went and got himself shot in the second chapter. And that stuff happens. You get halfway through the book and you figure out that things are not quite going the way you thought they were.
So I guess as
which, by the way, sounds like a mild case of schizophrenia, I might add.
Well, and I guess it must be as entertaining for you as a reader as they as you write the book and you get yourself you have a general understanding of where you're going with the tale, so to speak. But you find yourself in situations that maybe you had not planned on, and then you have to understand the character well enough to be able to say how would he or she react in this situation, huh?
Yes, and when I wrote my first book, I was actually sending a friend of mine chapters, and I got to the middle and I wrote a chapter, and he sent it back and told me I had no idea what the characters were doing, that these guys would not behave this way, and what was I drinking? And he was absolutely right.
So what were you drinking?
Halfway through the book, he knew the characters better than I did.
Really?
I was trying to make them have a conversation that was unnatural to them, and he rejected it.
Wow.
So if you get the characters... If you can get them on track, then you should be able to tell what fits and what doesn't, except I guess I wasn't very good at it.
Well, and is there any formula for rolling out a character development so the reader can identify as you develop a character, the person or persons in the novel?
Oh, there are tons of formulas, and absolutely none of them work. I've never taken a writing course in my life, so... About halfway through the last book, I started reading writing books by all these famous writers to figure out what to do. And what they essentially said was they said stuff like, well, don't make your character boring. Don't make your character unbelievable. And they offered up all these formulas, but nobody's quite figured out. I mean, that's one of the very, very cool things about writing fiction is even the great authors have bad books. You know, even when you know the formula, even when you're very good at it, sometimes you just can't quite pull it off. It's exactly like advertising. There's a formula for commercials, but not all commercials are good.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the greats in developing great creative in advertising are those that will tell you that the first thing you do with your formulas is you throw those out the window, mm-hmm. and you begin to work from a gut instinct and an understanding and a sense of how to develop something that is going to connect with the consumer not only on a informational level but on an emotional level.
Got to take a break here on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth, and our special guest, Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. We'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
I love her.
I feel light as a breeze.
I love her.
I've got Liverpool teas. He loves me.
Puts me at ease.
He loves me.
There you go. Probably have a pair in your closet somewhere, or they went to the shelter.
What's that? Liverpool?
Liverpool tees.
Oh, yeah. Did you
ever
have
that? A long time ago.
Yeah.
I had Beetle boots when I was a kid.
Well, and I had the wig.
You had the wig? Mm-hmm. I had the hair, actually. And you still have yours, so I shouldn't say that.
What, the wig?
Yeah.
No, this is my hair.
Sam Hill, our special guest today. By the way, we forgot to drop in the web address, and it is heliosconsulting.com. That's... For those of you who don't know how to spell Helios, it's H-E-L-I-O-S, consulting.com.
Which I think is a Greek god, but I will get clarification on that. By the way, I forgot to mention there are many, many wonderful reviews on Sam's book, mm-hmm. HollywoodReporter.com. Sam Hill's Buzz Monkey is a beaut, fast, sleek, and funny in all the right places. And then it says, with George Clooney slotted into the role, he'd make a natural franchise hero. I mean,
really?
It's been mentioned over and over in several reviews that I've read that were sent to me that this could be a series of books, but I think it has either television potential or movie potential.
Mm-hmm. Having cable or regular?
No, certainly cable, and it would be the X-rated channel. No, it would make for a great full-length feature film.
Here's a guy that's on cable. His name is Andy Borowitz.
That's true.
On the Advertising Show.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
In what was seen as a marked shift in American foreign policy this past week, the United States put the entire nation of Iraq up for sale on the internet auction site eBay. The decision to list the Middle Eastern nation on the popular auction site surprised many at the United Nations, where just days ago, President George W. Bush had made an impassioned plea for troops and money to help rebuild the war-torn country. But Mr. Bush hinted at the policy shift in his national radio address, saying, "We're not occupiers nor liberators. We are highly motivated sellers." French President Jacques Chirac was the first to notice the listing of Iraq on eBay when the French leader logged on in search of some rare recordings. While surfing the auction site, Mr. Chirac noticed the listing of the oil-rich nation with an asking price of $87 billion and a seller identified as only Rummy 55. Jake Braswell, 39, a video store clerk who regularly visits eBay in search of memorabilia from the 70s television series Battlestar Galactica, said he had no intention of putting in a bid for Iraq, adding that he thought the listing itself was misleading. "No way is Iraq in mint condition," Mr. Braswell said. As of late last night, U.S. officials were still holding out hope that someone, possibly erstwhile media mogul Edgar Bronfman Jr., might be tempted to make a bid for Iraq, but their mood was growing increasingly pessimistic. In retrospect, asking $87 billion might have been a mistake, one official noted.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
On The Advertising Show, a regular feature and always fun to hear the humor of Andy Borowitz. We've got every week what we do is we take an opportunity to look at the good and the not so good as far as the advertising goes. And this week it's good advertising.
And now it's time for The Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
Okay, so it's good this week. What have you got?
It's good. It's from Alaska Air. You talked about it last week. Alaska Air's Bench Spot by Wood Donge out of Seattle. The spot is a great spot. It shows a businessman that is crowded onto a plane with bench seating. It shows all the craziness that would go along with that kind of setting. And it really does a great job of identifying its primary market, that being the frequent business traveler, and, of course, the secondary market being the leisure vacation traveler. But what I liked about this spot, Ray, is that the spot identifies their competition without saying who their competition is, which mm-hmm. is clearly Southwest Air.
Sure.
And Alaska Airlines delivers on the brand value to the consumer, relaxed, pampered, and unrushed travel, which is how they deliver the business person at the end of the spot, where he comes off of this plane that is very crowded and hectic and this bench seating that has nine different people sitting on it, and it's just a crazy setting. It's very humorous, and then it transitions over to a wonderful, relaxed setting on what is now Alaska Air.
Right.
So they do a great job of
ice cubes on that
airplane? Yeah. And what's interesting is they identify wonderful vacations to Mexico. So who would ever think of taking
Alaska Airlines to Mexico?
That's right. The ending graphic says 7 Mexico destinations, and then it shows their web address. So it's a great spot that I think does a wonderful job of conveying the Alaska Airline brand, and they differentiate themselves very well from their competition.
Maybe they should think about a name change, though, in the future, something like that. You know,
Frigidaire?
Alaska and Mexican Air or something like
that. I think Frigidaire is already taken.
Frigidaire? I like that. Thanks to Sam Hill. Don't forget to check out the Buzz Monkey. It's just called Buzz Monkey. HeliosConsulting.com is Sam's website if you want to find out more. Our website, by the way, is theadvertisingshow.com. That's where we stream the show live. We also save the old shows, archival, and also give that your access to get us questions throughout the week here on The Advertising Show. The Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production on the SSI Radio Network.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
On The Advertising Show, it's being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, and we are not only live on your radio, but we may be live on your computer as well as we stream live on the Internet at theadvertisingshow.com. That's a great place to send us questions throughout the week, communication, and many times we actually respond to your questions, don't we?
Sometimes.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Usually.
Yeah. Sam Hill is our special guest. You might recall some of his books, Radical Marketing. What else do we have here?
60 Trends in 60 minutes.
Yeah. Or 59 Trends in 59 minutes, if you choose to only have 59.
Well, that's the one that's in the used book section.
They lost that last trend, didn't they?
That's true.
He's also president of Helios Consulting, which specializes in developing breakthrough growth strategies for leading companies. So we'll have Sam on here in just a little while. We've got Patrick Meyer joining us from Fusion 5. We've got... let's see, Jeffrey Gittimer on the way as well, the Wacky World of Marketing, just a whole bunch of stuff, too.
You know, and when we get Sam on the show later this hour, or later this half hour, I should say, we're going to ask him, Ray, a question that you and I talked about off the air, which is, what in the world does a vice chairman and chief strategic officer for Darcy Macasus do when he was actually doing that, which was not so long ago? So, you know, 12th largest ad agency in the world, I got to believe that he was busy. But we'd like to know what in the world a chief strategic officer does.
Well, I think he's in charge of all the security, the guards. Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Well, and he has to be very strategic in his security.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Let's get into Patrick Meyer now in Fusion 5. Listen closely.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
How do you get the consumer really passionate about your brand? One way of doing it? Lara Croft and Tomb Raider 2. In today's pop culture, your brand has to be connected. It has to be part of what's going on with young adults. In a smart way, Daimler Chrysler took Lara Croft and Tomb Raider 2 and their brand new Rubicon and brought them together in the sequel. The result? An incredibly powerful marketing episode this summer with Lara Croft driving the Rubicon in the movie and extended all across movie theaters, advertising, retail, PR, events, every place Lara Croft and Jeep could get to. They took the product news value of Rubicon, the 4x4, and put it into the movie and had her put it to the test. So if you can't have Lara Croft on your team, here's what you might want to do. Look for passion points to connect your brand to. Sports, fashion, entertainment, music, family, all of them could be potential passion points for your particular brand and its positioning. Second, build an episode or a series of episodes around the passion point that will intrigue the consumer, make them talk about it, and will touch them in their heart and soul. And lastly, make sure that each episode, using its passion point, ultimately drives the consumer to retail. Because if they're passionate and they don't buy, it doesn't work.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
Yes, it did, and it's started right here, as a matter of fact, on the Advertising Show.
That's right.
Always some good advice, too. Love the concept there, too, with the, you know, the car, Lara Croft.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I guess BMW Films that started that many years ago when they launched the Z3, I guess it was around 98, I'm thinking. It was 98. A lot have followed in that genre of getting a car introduced through a feature film. And as you read last hour... Mm-hmm. I guess there might be a consumer guy that might be after you if you do that.
Yes, exactly.
They're trying
Ralph.
To, yeah, Ralph
Nader. Well, what he drives?
Well, he probably walks.
He probably does. He probably drives an SUV. Did you hear about the you know, the criticism of SUVs and people driving them.
Right. What would Jesus drive?
Right.
A donkey.
Continuing news.
A donkey pulled RUV.
Sheep, actually.
SUV, yes.
Continuing news reports of vilify sport utility vehicles for their safety records. The ads attack their fuel consumption and vandals burn or spray paint them in California and Texas. I've never seen any spray painted in Texas. Yet 40% of U.S. households have one in their garage, and SUVs accounted for nearly half of all vehicle sales through August of this year. How about that?
Well, what happened to that what would Jesus drive? Because when we talked about this a year and a half ago, and I don't mean this in a sacrilegious way, but I mean this understanding the Bible. Jesus would be in an RV, not an SUV, because he always had a crowd. And you wouldn't have fit that in an SUV. You'd need a larger vehicle. And I don't think we'd be worried about using the goods of what the earth has developed, in this case, oil.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, it's baseball season, Ray.
Yes, it is.
And Major League Baseball has launched a campaign highlighting the passion and intensity of Major League Baseball players, which, of course, you would think they would have that, right?
Hopefully so,
The campaign's entitled I Live for This Game, which has been airing during ESPN's Wednesday Night Baseball, four spots including one Japanese and one in Spanish. Both with English subtitles, will air throughout the end of the 2003 postseason. Derek Jeter, Sammy Sosa, I think it's Ishiro is his name, and Pedro Martinez appear in the spots. The campaign will run worldwide, including in-game on Fox, ESPN, and in-stadium at Major League Baseball parks. McCann Erickson, New York, has developed the campaign. So as you see those spots, I found it interesting that they were using subtitles in English for the Spanish and the Japanese version. Of course, I'm wondering, is there a Spanish TV channel that's carrying Major League Baseball? I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but...
You would think that there might be.
You would think there would be, at least postseason, and... And therefore, why would you need English subtitles on that? But assuming that there's not, I guess these would be running on English-speaking, on Fox, as it says, and ESPN.
Sure.
And so when we hear this language, we can read it and kind of feel like we're at an artistic film theater.
One of those kinds, yeah, exactly. Talking about baseball, too, the World Series, they say, are setting a new buying records. This is an Ad Age. It says marketers are signing up in record time and record rates for the 2003 World Series, the 100th anniversary of baseball. That would be a special part, one to be a part of. The series gets underway October the 18th. According to a network and media buyers contacted by Ad Age, it is now fetching an average of $3.25 million. That's $325,000 for a 30-second spot with the first five games, and the prices fall off in later games to about $275,000, so you can get a deal on the later games. Exactly.
You know, I was reading, I believe, in that same issue, Ray, or I'm not sure, maybe a more further back issue, but the Academy Awards were bundled with the upfronts, and as a result, the Academy Awards, which I believe are being handled by ABC this year, have been selling out briskly and are very close to being sold out. And they're moving the Academy Awards up a month, trying to get away from the Grammys and the other awards.
That's a good idea. It's a real good idea.
It really is. And they, as I said, they offered those through this year's upfronts, and I think it's a good indication that the market is heating up. Certainly what I see being written is that national advertising is heating up. Local is still dragging a little bit, but gosh, it's all positive, and we're looking up as far as demand, as far out as early next year, first quarter 04. So
liking that. That's nice to see it come back.
Sure.
Nice to see it come back.
Yeah.
On the way, Sam Hill will be talking to Sam out of Chicago, author of Buzz Monkey and many other great books as well. Sam is a fun and entertaining guest, and we will have him on next. Out of Chicago with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
The Del Monte tomato sauce, sir. Shall I ring it up?
Yes, thank you.
14 cans.
Yes, they're great Christmas stocking stuffers.
Christmas?
Oh, I know I'm rushing the season, but those green Del Monte cans and the bright red tomatoes, handsome, inexpensive.
I see, and then you use them for the cooking afterwards.
cooking.
Sir, Del Monte tomato sauce is meant for cooking.
Not just for nice red and green Christmas stocking stuffers.
Oh, no,
classic
so
spot on the advertising show from Dick and Bert, Dick Orkin, Bert Burgess, and for Del Monte. A lot of great stuff coming out of California with those two guys.
Before the Giant?
Before?
I don't know.
Probably. No, no, it'll be after.
But the radio was... Did he portray the Giant there on the radio?
You know, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know who portrayed that, actually.
Yeah.
Tony the Tiger, I think that's who it was.
Well, as long as he stood on a box when he produced it.
Special guest today is Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. Sam is a president of Helios Consulting, which specializes in developing breakthrough growth strategies for leading companies, author of Radical Marketing and 60 Trends in 60 Minutes, 30 Trends in 30 Minutes, and just a couple of trends if you have the time.
Paperback.
Yeah, nice. It's a recipe thing. Sam, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Hey, Sam, thank you so much for joining us. I loved your book, I must say. For those that are tuning in to the advertising show thinking we're going to talk about advertising, and we will, this is a great book because your first novel, because it has some advertising relationship to it in that your novel is centered around a company called Polymath. And I guess with your background with advertising and marketing, talk a little bit about what Polymath is and maybe how you came up with that as the business foundation for this novel.
Well, Polymath basically is in the business of checking quotes because quotes are always wrong. Whenever people use quotes, they're always wrong. About 2 years ago, I think it was Linda Thaler, an advertising person out of New York, had an ad in the Wall Street Journal that... attributed the "if I had more time, I would have written a shorter letter" quote to Lincoln. And Lincoln didn't say it. A guy named Blaise Pascal said it. And people think the road to hell is paved with good intentions comes from the Bible, but Karl Marx actually said
yeah,
it.
Yeah, what a surprise there.
So these guys keep, these guys make a living off sourcing quotes correctly. And this little business is called Polymath. Now, the interesting thing is of all the mail I've gotten since I've written the book, most of the mail has been from people who want to know how to get in touch with Polymath so they can get a job there.
Is there such a company that does that kind of thing?
No, but I'm tempted to start one because I've got people who apparently know a lot of stuff. One reviewer called it called the people who work there Trivial Pursuit players from hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know everything. But that's how the company... That's how I envision the company. To my knowledge, none exists, although it does seem to be a pretty cool idea.
Well, and it's, it's a fiction, obviously. A novel is in your case, full fiction. Sometimes novels are based on I guess, some kind of fact. But in this particular case, I got to tell you, I'm an ad guy, have been my entire life. And I mean, as you described that company, and you did a very great job of explaining not only the company, but who its clients would be and what its purpose would be, and actually showed how a company such as that would function by describing meetings, et cetera. I got to tell you, Sam, either I'm a bigger sucker than I've made myself out to be here, or you did a hell of a sell job there. Because I thought those kind of companies would have existed the way you described them.
Well, I think it's just good luck. I mean, whenever writers do things, they have to make a certain amount up. I mean, I hope all these guys writing serial killer books aren't genuinely serial
yeah,
killers.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But if you do it right, I mean, Hannibal Lecter scares the living hell out of all of us. And Thomas Harris is just a nice and wonderful man who certainly doesn't cut up people in his basement.
Mm-hmm.
We think. But when you make it up well, that's the way it comes out.
And, of course, whoever wrote Hannibal Lecter, you would know this, Sam, was obviously a National Hockey League fan. Wouldn't that be true?
Well, he does enjoy the mask.
Yes, he does enjoy the mask. But, of course, Ray enjoys the mask, too, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, right.
I read many brand names in your book, references to Nextel, an interesting aside to us here in our local home state of Texas. Chuy's Mexican restaurant is mentioned in your book, Coca-Cola, Starbucks, and a brand that we would call an infamous brand, the Ku Klux Klan, is also mentioned in your book. Mm. Notwithstanding the Ku Klux Klan, these other brand names, Is your novel, now you may need to be coming clean with me here, Sam, because I may be asking you a question you haven't been asked before, but are you the first novel that has decided upon an alternative revenue stream involving product placement?
Well, I'm not getting an alternative revenue stream, but I do think that Chewy's ought to buy me a dinner because I said very nice things about it.
You did.
Did you really?
So next time I'm down in Austin, I think it's worth at least one free tortilla.
Well, how about the Elvis plate? We'll go all the way, Sam, huh?
It's I actually quote a Chewy's T-shirt, which is one of the funniest T-shirts I've ever seen.
You did do that, and you did throw in a positive about their enchiladas, a compliment. But, anyone that has been to Chewy's down here, and, of course, most Texans have, there's an array of T-shirts that you can purchase as you walk out of there.
Now we have brand placement on the show, too.
Well, we're going to have to get...
Chewy's getting a national spot now. That's great.
Let's get Payables on the phone.
Exactly.
But you know, what's really interesting is that you guys picked up on that, and a couple of other folks have mentioned it, and I had no idea I was doing it as I wrote the book.
Really?
And I think that's one of those places where what I do for a living might bleed into the other, whether I quite intend for it to or not.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because in each case, it's obvious that you did do it without any preconceived ideas, because as you integrate these brand names into your storyline, they do not look contrived. You mentioned Nextel. I'm going from memory here. You mentioned Nextel, and you're talking about one of the people there on campus getting on their phone and hitting the line that would be more of an intercom kind of shortwave, whatever they call that, where you're...
Walkie-talkie?
Yeah, that kind of thing. The Nextel phone system that offers that. And I think Nextel was one of the first brands that I recalled reading. And then when I saw these other brand names popping up, I said, damn it, Sam is on to something here. He's the first novelist that's figured out how to do brand placement.
And I figured half of it. I figured out how to do brand placement. I haven't figured out how to get paid yet.
Well, right. That's called invoicing, and we can talk to you about that at the end of the show. Gilly, I assume, is the way you pronounce her name?
Well, I pronounce it Gilly. But everyone who's been reading the book has been pronouncing it Gilly, so I may be mispronouncing.
Well, you're the writer. You're the author. I'm going to go with Gilly. And the opening of Chapter 7, if I could just read an excerpt here.
We have a moment, yeah.
Gilly lay naked under the sheet beside me. Her head popped up on one arm. On her hip was perched a half-empty Starbucks cup. There's that brand placement.
Yeah.
The big clock over the door read 6:35. She'd arrived a half hour ago. I must tell you, Sam, and I will stop there because this is a family show.
Yeah.
But if you ever decide that a novel is not your genre to live the rest of your life in, I think Harlequin Books has a title or two in mind for you.
Well, Brad, there are two bad parts of that. One is my daughter's 22 and read the book, and she wants me to put Post-it parts around the sex parts because she says it's nauseating to read sex parts.
Especially from her dad, right?
Yeah. I can understand that feeling. Absolutely.
The other part is I was at a party last night, and when you write a book, people have conversations with you about the book. And this woman turned around to my wife and said, you know, he wrote such a great sex scene in the book. He must be a fabulous lover. And I think my wife, I think she went weak at the knees. I think she almost passed out at getting this question in front of 20 people.
How did she answer it?
Well, thank God she took the fifth.
Well, let me ask you something. Has her bruised rib, where you elbowed her, cleared up at all?
We got to take a break on the advertising show. We got the Wacky World of Marketing with Bruce Abbott coming up in just a minute. And more conversation with Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. That's what we're talking about today. With Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, stick around. Who's that?
I don't know.
Brad. Just call him Brad.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Ireland, where mobile phone users worldwide will soon be able to dial a dolphin. Scientists at a dolphin sanctuary in Ireland have teamed up with British mobile telecom giant Vodafone to transmit the clicking and whistling sounds of bottlenose dolphins. In theory, spokesman says, you could phone up and listen to dolphins while sitting in a traffic jam as a stress reliever. However, one difficulty is that dolphins use a wide frequency band when they communicate, of which humans can only hear a fraction. You know, my girlfriend tells me that all the time. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and, unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
There's just one Schlitz, nothing else comes near. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. Just one beer fits, this great one here. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer.
What makes Schlitz irreplaceable? The most careful brewing in the world.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth, and our special guest today, Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. Schlitz, that's a northern beer, isn't it?
Is it still around?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Is it, Sam? You would know.
I think it actually is still around. I think it's under contract with someone. I think
you're right.
Somebody borrowed the name.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, we'll have more on beer later this hour, so stick
around. Welcome to the beer show.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
You know, I'm looking at a review that the Chicago Tribune wrote for you, wrote on your book, Sam, Buzz Monkey, and I'm going to read the last paragraph. Hill's hectic plot works well, a satisfying mixture of surprises and confirmations, but what really makes this book a winner, and the author, reviewer goes in parentheses to say, and we hope the start of a series, which is a hell of a compliment, are the great props. Kiernan, who is the protagonist and main character, Kiernan's splendid collection of tops, his basketball court bedroom, and especially his deep knowledge of surprising trivia. Now, I gotta ask you, Sam, you put yourself out there with a novel, unlike a business book, where you figure you'll have your critics, and that's okay, you can disagree with me from a business standpoint. But when you put yourself out there as a novelist, these positives, and I have several here, these positive reviews that you've received have got to make you feel good.
They make you feel great. But the problem is, Brad, it works the other way as well. If somebody is reading one of your business books, and if they don't like it, well, you can always say, well, they didn't like the topic or they're not a brand person. But if they don't like your fiction, it means that they unscrewed the top of your head, they looked inside, and it was boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's a real personal attack is what you're saying, Sam.
So everything, whenever you get any review, whenever you get any feedback, it hurts twice as bad with fiction as it hurts or feels twice as good with fiction than nonfiction.
So I guess you say it cuts both ways. Wouldn't it, you know, and I've never been there, but I would assume that after a while, Sam, you'd have to say, hey, there are many, many books out there that are liked by some and not by others. There are movies out there that are liked by some but not others. And you know, so, I mean, you're going to have people that support what you do and others that are going to say it stinks. I mean, isn't that just kind of a given?
Well, it wasn't for me because, having never taken a writing course, I was really worried that I was going to write this thing and embarrass myself. I was worried that it was going to get out there and it was only going to sell 8 copies and that was going to be to my friends and I'd have to give them their money back. So when the reviews started coming in and they came in kind of so uniformly positive, it was a tremendous relief to me because it meant that, you know, it meant the thing was readable, which sounds a little bit, what's the word when you're, when you're shucking and jiving to milk a compliment? It sounds like that's what I'm doing.
But, soliciting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the truth is, I was terrified. When I got the first review, I actually didn't read it. I put it down for a while and walked away because I was afraid to turn over the newspaper and look at it.
Hmm. And, you know, I think I want to make sure everyone heard Sam Hill say he's never taken a writing course. This is from a man that has not only a couple of wonderful business books, but writes regularly for the Harvard Business Review, Business Strategy and Business, the Wall Street Journal, L.A. Times, Financial Times. You know, it's been said, I've heard both writers and speakers, for that matter, some of the best that are at that craft have said they have never had any formal training in their particular endeavor. What's your feeling on that? Do you think if you were to take a writing course, it would destroy you?
Well, my agent and my editors insist that I should not, because they insist I've got it just about right now and I ought to leave well enough alone, and that if I start thinking about it, it might ruin it for me. In general, I think people should remember that I've never taken a writing course, but I never had anything published until I was 40 years old. So I think the difference is courses can accelerate things.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you learn it yourself the hard way by reading things, it's probably going to take you a while to figure it out. And that's why you take a course. It's not that you can't figure it out by yourself. It's just that somebody else might be able to help you get there a little bit faster.
Well, and
did you find the Danny Simon thing useful?
Very useful. excuse me. I found it very useful, if nothing else, than a peek behind the scenes of a writer's world, working with very popular shows at that time, the Danny Thomas Show, the
sure.
Sid Caesar Show, the Dick Van Dyke Show. So, yeah, not only that, but there was great innovation and great knowledge that he was passing about.
I think you also have to realize, too, that you've got a you've got a natural ability. I mean, there's a lot of folks who could go to many, many writing schools or go to take lessons to do something and never really excel in it. So you've got to be good at or have a propensity of being good at what you do in order to achieve some sort of success in that field.
And, you know, Sam, you mentioned that the tendency to develop your own style and not have someone tell you how to do it. Maybe in your youth, and I'm speaking just to everyone that's caring to listen at this point, when you're 20, 21, 22, and you want to read a book about a how-to, sales, marketing, whatever, go right ahead.
Too, yeah.
If you're in your 40s and embarking on a new career, I think the worst thing you could do is read a book on how to do it.
Yeah. That's how I feel about golf lessons. I throw those lessons away. It's like, I don't want this.
Yeah, but you throw your clubs, too.
No, I do not throw my clubs.
You don't?
No.
Yeah.
But you understand what I'm saying? Sometimes you can really screw yourself up by taking a little bit too much instruction.
Concentrating too hard, yeah.
It's time to take a break on the advertising show. We're not done with Sam yet. We've got him back for another segment here, so stick around with Ray Schoens and Brad Forsyth.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schoens and Brad Forsyth.
DJ Thomas. There's a whole new way of living. Pepsi helps supply the drive. It's got a lot to give to those who like to be helped, cause Pepsi helps them come alive. It's a Pepsi generation.
On the advertising show, a classic spot from good old B.J. Thomas. The raindrops keep falling on my head.
His head.
Men. Mm-hmm. Guy. Anyway.
Great guy.
Sam Hill is our special guest. Got some just a few minutes more to spend with Sam here on the advertising show. Talking to Sam out of Chicago today.
Well, one of the reviews here, Ray, from the says the Mercury News. I assume that's the San Jose Mercury News. The Buzz Monkey is a stylish, fun piece of business. Dialogue is quick and witty. And here's the part I like. When Top, and that's the main character, straps on his gun and really goes to work, he has the look of a series character, and I hope he is. That's a reviewer mm-hmm. out of San Jose. So have you had people, Sam, suggest that your book has the potential of a screenplay or maybe television series?
You know, folks have suggested it. I haven't let myself think about it. Because I think you can get twisted and bitter if you wait by the phone for the studios to call.
Mm-hmm.
But the easiest thing for me to do is just kind of concentrate on writing the next one and try to do a good job. And then I assume that if it ever becomes a TV show, my agent will send me a check.
Yeah, for a long time.
I think you'd probably get the call before the check, wouldn't you?
We would hope.
Yeah.
We would hope.
You know, I had a friend years ago when I worked in St. Louis, Ray, KC95. He was a writer for an ad agency. Mm-hmm. And he ended up writing a book called The White Palace. And The White Palace went on to be a movie. And this fella and my roommate and I used to go out and do all the crazy things you did back in your early to mid-20s. And it's a great example of a book that turns into a movie. And this guy, I hope he's not listening, but he's kind of like he peaked at the age of 27. And he's now probably in his early 50s, and I'm not sure he did anything. So you're in a prime age, Sam, to be peaking right now, aren't you?
Well, I hope so. I mean, that was one of the things with Radical. I wrote Radical. When we wrote Radical, when Glenn and I wrote it, it was an immediate bestseller and immediately got translated into a bunch of stuff and immediately went paperback. So after 3 months in the writing business, I was convinced that I had this thing nailed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that Tom Peters could just get his crap off the shelf so they could make room for my book.
Right.
And neither one of the next two books did nearly as well as Radical. So I'm not letting myself get excited over Buzz Monkey. If it ends up a movie, maybe I can scrounge a free ticket.
Well, and humility is a good thing, and I must say, I will say it because you may not. I was talking to Sam off the air, Ray, yesterday, and I was asking him how sales are going. To many surprise out there, publishers will not tell you about sales, and that's a whole other show we could talk about, Sam. But right. Sam did mention, which is a wonderful indicator, that a lot of collectors out there that collect first novels of writers such as Sam are buying up his book. So I think that's a wonderful indicator as well. Sam, your main character, Top Kiernan, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
Kiernan. Is he patterned, I'm assuming, as I read this book, because I knew you from being on the show before, both Ray and I. I assume that wonderful character, Top Kiernan, is patterned a little bit after Sam Hill, huh?
Well, anytime you write in the first person, I think you end up with some characteristics scattered across your different characters. I am like Top in that I like quotes, and I am like Top in that I ride bicycles. But after that, Top Kiernan is really the stuff I wish I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish I was always cool, and I wish I always had the cool line. And Top does, because I spend 2 days thinking about what he's going to say next.
Mm-hmm.
Top's also very physical, and he's very gifted, and the girls like him a lot. So half of Top, probably a third of Top is what I am, and two-thirds of Top is kind of what I wish I was, to be honest.
And, of course, I guess then that goes without saying that you do not carry a 9mm.
I do not carry a 9mm. And my other character is Benny the Blade, and nor do I carry a straight razor.
Well, that's a good thing to know, though.
That's true. You know, we just have a minute or so left. Talk about why someone would want to pick this book up.
In 30 seconds or less, Sam, you can do it.
Well, I think the short message is it's a lot of fun, and it's a very serious and very twisted mystery that you can get through pretty quick and hopefully enjoy yourself.
And, you know, if you're an ad agency, a marketing person or whatever, you know, you got a lot of brand of product development in there. You have a company that I just now found out was made up by Sam. It's a great book. They have richly developed characters. I encourage everyone. Buzz Monkey by Sam Hill. Thanks for joining us, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, bud.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You know me. Would you believe I'm Bugs Bunny? I'm also the voice of many other cartoon characters. But in here, they don't care if I'm Elmer Fudd. So I carry an American Express card, the one card I need for travel and entertaining, for business and pleasure. Why, without this, the only way I'd get any attention is by saying, that's all, folks.
To apply for a card, call 800.
It's a classic spot featuring Mel Blanc as Mr. Bunny, Bugs. And what a great way to brand that product a long time ago. Do you know me?
Yeah, the voice of many Disney characters, right?
And now his son has taken over that role, too.
I've heard that.
Good conversation with Sam Hill, author of Buzz Monkey. Go get the book. It's good. Also, get some of his other books as well. A lot of great business and marketing books as well. We've got Scott Bedbury, author of a brand new world, a new brand world, I should say, Eight Principles of Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. That ought to be good. That's coming up next weekend.
Well, I got to tell you, if you're familiar with Nike, if you're familiar with Starbucks, you're familiar with his work.
Good.
I mean, the guys with, you know, if you were to say name three wonderful brands that started in America today, Starbucks and Nike would be two of them.
Right.
I think
exactly.
What would be the third one? Viagra? I don't know. Hey, I want to just mention before we close, Sam Hill and this book, Buzz Monkey, I got to tell you, as you read, or I should really say, as you experience this novel, you feel like you really know these characters, Ray, personally, and the talent that this that Sam has in being able to, oh, I don't know, strike a balance between drama and entertainment as the story unfolds. It's just great reading. And when, you know, I'm not big on novels, and I mean that only because I read so much, as I know you do too, Ray, with the business-related material that we have to read here for the show and our careers. But, gosh, if you want to read a wonderful novel, you'll find that the Buzz Monkey novel from Sam Hill is a wonderful read, and it's a quick read, and I, you know, if I use the word engaging story, well, whatever the word is for engaging story times 10, that's what this is.
So don't wait for the movie. Go get the book.
Not only that, but if Sam hears me saying that, he will quote you and me, and then it'll be a little line there and say, from the advertising show, and we'll get publicity. So that's why I did all that. Not really. It's a great book. It's a great book.
Go get it. Buzz Monkey. Yeah. Time now for another dramatic and engaging kind of a personality. His name is Jeff Gittimer.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
How do your customers feel about the way you talk to them? That's a pretty important question because it determines what they say about you after the transaction is over. Well, your problems are over because I've discovered a miracle method that works every time. Here's how to test the way you talk to a customer. A surefire way to determine how what you say will sound to the customer before you say it. A way to test your talk, so to speak. Here it is. Put grandma at the end of everything you say. What? Every time you speak to a customer, end it with grandma. If it sounds like something you would say to your grandmother or your grandmother would want to hear, then say it. If not, don't. How would this sound? Sorry, we're closed, grandma. Next, grandma. What's this in reference to, grandma? That's our policy, grandma. You get it? This is the best real-world self-test I've ever found. Get real, baby. If you wouldn't say it to your grandma, why would you say it to your customer?
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
this is Jeffrey Gittimer reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks.
Grandma. Right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Shouldn't talk that way, Jeffrey, to your grandma.
Would you say that to your wife?
It's
grandma?
Great. It's great advice, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Always is good advice. Yeah. Jeffrey Gittimer on The Advertising Show.
I don't think I would have passed the grandma test earlier before we went on the air.
Really?
Based on what I said to you.
Just don't call me grandma.
Right.
Or grandpa, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, you're on that exercise program.
Right?
You're on the exercise program. You're moving things around a little bit, reshaping your body.
The wind blows and moves around. Scott Bedbury is our guest next week on The Advertising Show, author of A New Brand World. See, that's kind of a twisted title there, isn't it? Eight Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. It'll be fun to talk to Scott next week.
You know, do I have time to read this, Ray?
Yeah, a little bit, about a minute.
Well, I got to tell you, the publisher of Sales Lead Report just released results of a survey and from 3,900 senior marketing and sales professionals recently that showed that both departments are anticipating increased budgets for 2004 compared to 2003. So things are looking up.
Good.
I think this is all positive.
Purchases online content is up as well, they say. The popular categories up 23% to 748 million from January through June.
Wow.
Wow. So that was all on your credit card, too.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Don't forget, next week it's Scott Bedbury, author of A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. Stay in contact with us throughout the week at theadvertisingshow.com. You can hear archival shows, you can hear news and information, and send us a note if you'd like as well. The Advertising Show has been brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. To find them online, go to adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and we're here on the SSI Radio Network.